Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Blog Talk Radio, and I'm Russ Johnson, and we are doing something called The Ministry of Jesus is the Answer for Today's Problems. And so we want to get on the way. Let's call Jillian and see where she is. And she dialed it up. I should have called her earlier, but I was listening to something else. 802015. Let's see if she's available for us. If not, we'll do something else. Okay.
Hello, Jillian here. Sorry I can't take your call, but if you leave me your name and your phone number, I will get back with you as soon as I can. Thanks for calling. Bye.
Hi, Jillian. Russ Johnson here.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1.
Okay. All right. I can sit in a minute. Just a quick second here. Let's move on. Where are we? Plan B, Plan C, Plan D. Where am I going to do with this? I should start all over again. Anyway, let's do this.
By inner values, I mean the qualities that we all appreciate in others and toward which we all have a natural instinct, bequeathed by our biological nature as animals that survive and thrive only in an environment of concern, affection, and warm-heartedness, or in a single word, compassion. The essence of compassion is a desire to alleviate the suffering of others and to promote their well-being. This is the spiritual principle from which all other positive inner values emerge. We all appreciate in others the inner qualities of kindness, patience, tolerance, forgiveness, and generosity, and in the same way, we are all averse to displays of greed, malice, hatred, and bigotry. So actively promoting the positive inner qualities of the human heart that arise from our core disposition toward compassion and learning to combat our more destructive propensities will be appreciated by all. And the first beneficiaries of such a strengthening of our inner values will, no doubt, be ourselves. Our inner lives are something we ignore at our own peril, and many of the greatest problems we face in today's world are the result of such neglect. Not long ago, I visited Orissa, a region in eastern India. The poverty in this part of the country, especially among tribal people, has recently led to growing conflict and insurgency. I met with a member of parliament from the region and discussed these issues. From him, I gathered that there are a number of legal mechanisms and well-funded government projects already in place aimed at protecting the rights of tribal people and even giving them material assistance. The problem, he said, was that because of corruption, these programs were not benefiting those they were intended to help. When such projects are subverted by dishonesty, inefficiency, and irresponsibility on the part of those charged with implementing them, they become worthless. This example shows very clearly that even when a system is sound, its effectiveness depends on the way it is used. Ultimately, any system, any set of laws or procedures can only be as effective as the individuals responsible for its implementation.
That's from the book Beyond Religion by the Dalai Lama. You might want to get that. It's on Amazon. An excellent book. Here's a little bit more of that.
From His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Beyond Religion, Ethics for a Whole World. Introduction. I am an old man now. I was born in 1935 in a small village in northeastern Tibet. For reasons beyond my control, I have lived most of my adult life as a stateless refugee in India, which has been my second home for over 50 years. I often joke that I am India's longest-staying guest. In common with other people of my age, I have witnessed many of the dramatic events that have shaped the world we live in. Since the late 1960s, I have also traveled a great deal and had the honor to meet people from many different backgrounds, not just presidents and prime ministers, kings and queens, and leaders from all the world's great religious traditions, but also a great number of ordinary people from all walks of life. Looking back over the past decades, I find many reasons to rejoice. Through advances in medical science, deadly diseases have been eradicated. Millions of people have been lifted from poverty and have gained access to modern education and health care.
Hello, Jillian here.
We have a universal declaration of human rights, and awareness of the importance of such rights has grown tremendously. As a result, the ideals of freedom and democracy have spread around the world, and there is increasing recognition of the oneness of humanity.
That is really a good book. I think the other book that we wanted to discuss today would be Saving Jesus. But again, that book is by the Dalai Lama, and it's called Beyond Religion, and you can get that on Amazon.
There is also growing awareness of the importance of a healthy environment. In very many ways, the last half century or so has been one of progress and positive change. At the same time, despite tremendous advances in so many fields, there is still great suffering, and humanity continues to face enormous difficulties and problems. While in the more affluent parts of the world, people enjoy lifestyles of high consumption, there remain countless millions whose basic needs are not met. With the end of the Cold War, the threat of global nuclear destruction has receded, but many continue to endure the sufferings and tragedy of armed conflict. In many areas, too, people are having to deal with environmental problems, and with these, threats to their livelihood and worse. At the same time, many others are struggling to get by in the face of inequality, corruption, and injustice. These problems are not limited to the developing world. In the richer countries, too, there are many difficulties, including widespread social problems, alcoholism, drug abuse, domestic violence, family breakdown. People are worried about their children, about their education, and what the world holds in store for them. Now, too, we have to recognize the possibility that human activity is damaging our planet beyond a point of no return, a threat which creates further fear. And all the pressures of modern life bring with them stress, anxiety, depression, and increasingly, loneliness. As a result, everywhere I go, people are complaining. Even I find myself complaining from time to time. It is clear that something is seriously lacking in the way we humans are going about things. But what is it that we lack? The fundamental problem, I believe, is that at every level, we are giving too much attention to the external, material aspects of life while neglecting moral ethics and inner values.
Okay, again, that's from the book Beyond Religion by the Dalai Lama. That book is available. Excellent book, by the way. And Jillian Green, she's with us today, and she's going to talk about that. Jillian, how are you today?
Oh, good afternoon, Russell.
Well, good afternoon.
I'm
good
fine.
Afternoon. Good, good, good. What I titled this program today, I said the Ministry of Jesus is the answer to today's problems. But now we want to know what was the Ministry of Jesus. Let me just indicate that Jillian Green has been with us a number of times, and she's a clairvoyant, and she's from UK, England?
Originally.
Oh, okay, okay. Do you miss that area? You miss the, because now you in the United States, and you say
right.
You love us
here. I live in Montana. No, I don't miss Europe. I miss the gardens in England because of the climate. The gardens are beautiful. But apart from that, I have no wish to go back to Europe.
Okay. And then you were raised in the Anglican Church, right? Is that right? The Anglican Church?
True. Okay. The Church of England, yes.
The Church of England, okay. Let's talk about Jesus, his ministry. a lot of people read the Bible, and they, you know, one of the statements that you had made the other day in John 14:12, he says, "Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do, shall he also do, and greater works than these shall he do." Let's talk about, he's giving us the power that he had. What power is he talking about?
In the New Testament, you will find that Christ went around and taught by parables, by stories that he told people that had a simple message of salvation, right? Now, I have a very different view for many reasons, my extraterrestrial connection, the fact that I remember thousands of years of history, that I have been reincarnated many, many times on this planet as an Earth human, and that I have a very strong hereditary connection to the Anunnaki. So although I was raised in the Church of England and very high church, almost identical with the Church of Rome, in fact, I still have matured, not changed, but matured my opinions since. And so anybody who hears me has to understand that I am not trying to take away anybody else's belief structure. We can all believe as we wish. And I do think that those who believe that the crucifixion was a way of salvation for them are tying themselves into that instruction where Christ said of the woman who had the health problem, "Your faith has saved you." So just having that faith in the Lord can save you. But save you for what? What does it save us for? Well, now, clearly, if I've had many incarnations, at least the last 2,000 years of those incarnations have been in a fundamentally Christian world. But essentially, all the great religions of the world have similar belief structures. They all tell the same story of somebody sacrificing themselves for the benefit of all. And we in the Western world who were raised in the Christian church, we have Christ as the Savior. So for 2,000 years, I have been brainwashed lifetime after lifetime after lifetime with the idea that by crucifying someone and spilling their blood, that in itself is my salvation. And I wouldn't take that idea away from anybody, because if you believe it enough, if you have faith in it, then that makes it so. The question is, what is it saving you for? Well, what it's saving you for is another round of reincarnation, another turn at the wheel to expand your horizons, broaden your understanding of the teachings of Christ, and move on to a higher frequency or experience of living in the future. And so this takes many, many lifetimes. And the first thing we have to do is to be ready, willing, and able to not detach ourselves from the idea of Christ as the Savior, but rather to expand our point of view to widen that understanding. Now, if you remember, Christ also says in the New Testament, or an area, part of the New Testament, says that Christ went away secretly from the crowds, from the people to whom he was telling these parables, these stories, these giving good advice on how to live. And he took his disciples away into the desert or somewhere out of the way. And then it says he taught them. So what was it that he taught them? Because clearly they had heard all the parables when he was teaching them to everybody else. So from that point on, we are given to understand that our Lord Jesus Christ, two teachings. The first teaching was for the general public who weren't ready to understand the deeper truths and were going to need many, many more turns on the wheel of reincarnation to get there. And then the disciples, who he selected by judging their frequency, by judging their readiness to widen their understanding. He taught them something more. And the question then that we have to ask ourselves is, what was it more that Christ was teaching them? Well, he was teaching them the way to fulfill his admonition to the public at large, which was, be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. In other words, the foundation we all have to do is get ourselves into balance. And we do that by taking responsibility for all our actions, trying always to choose right rather than that which is expedient, and generally keeping our eye ball, which is the Creator, heading back into the light, heading back for the Creator, that always needs to be our goal. And Christ also says quite clearly, and at least three times that I can think of, everything that I can do, you can do, and more. Now, that is true for everybody, right? It was even more true for his disciples because they were already at that level of understanding and doing much that Christ was doing. And 2,500 years later, at this point in history, there are tens of thousands, millions of people raised in the Christian faith who are also at that point of readiness. Now, this is not exclusive just to Christians, because the message of Christ is the same message that went out from Buddha and went through all the Asian lands. It's the same message that went out through Kuan Yin and went out all through the Oriental lands. So this is a message for all people on the planet. And that message is that we can do everything that Christ does. And so we can choose at this point in our history, do we want as individuals to continue to say, Christ shed his blood for me, and that is my salvation, which is only part of the story, which we can talk about a bit more later. But that is only part of the story. That's step one, story for the level of understanding of the general public 2,500 years ago or 2,000 years ago when they were establishing the religion. It was fine then because they were speaking to children. Well, now we are speaking to adults. We're all adults now. We have all had over 2,000 years to grow up. And now as grown-ups, we need to find these hidden truths that Christ was teaching. And it's no longer about thinking that by killing him on the cross and shedding his blood, that in itself does the trick for us. No, we have to pay more attention to what he actually says, which is, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect, which means do it yourself. Salvation is a do-it-yourself program, and we have to work on ourselves as individuals, following the instructions that Christ gave us, which will enable us to raise our frequencies and do as Christ did. And what was it that Christ did more than anything else? It was live a perfectly balanced life as a human, not too much, not too little, in any level, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically. Perfect balance. And when we have that balance, then we can do all the things that Christ could do. So we need to start working on ourselves. And first, in order to work on ourselves in that way, I don't say throw out the baby with the bathwater. Don't throw away all the teachings of Christianity by any means. But start separating yourself from the idea that someone dying is enough to save you without you doing any of the work yourself. And the first thing is taking responsibility for our actions, all of us. And the next thing we have to do is start examining our own character and correcting it where it needs correcting. And I don't think there's anybody alive who doesn't have some faults and failings that need correcting. And this is not done in an attitude of the monastic life where we don't do anything for fun or anything for pleasure. No. I always believe, and I still do, the Creator's number one instruction to us is be happy. Above all else, we need to be happy. We need to love ourselves, and we need to love the whole creation and everybody else, because when we can do that, then we are operating on the frequency of perfect balance and perfect perfection. When we have no biases about anything, it's impossible to do bad things. It's just, it's an oxymoron to say that you can be perfectly balanced and still be evil, because evil is an imbalance in itself, usually an emotional imbalance that triggers evil. So we don't want anything to do with evil. And the first step to that is get our emotions in balance, and then think about how we feel about the physical life, how we feel about our mental life, how we feel about our emotional life, and how we feel about our spiritual life. And when we get those pretty well under our management, then we are following the path of Christ. And if you look at the Beatitudes, the Sermon on the Mount, which is a wonderful, wonderful guide, he is essentially calling everything blessed, complaining, that is not going to an extreme, that is satisfied, that is walking a middle road, because it is extreme emotion that we die with when we come to leave the planet and die. It is extreme emotions of too much love, too much hate, too much anger, too much greed, too much resentment. Anything that is too much is what ties us to the cycle of reincarnation, what brings us back again and again and again. Now, clearly, it's taken me a long, long time to learn these lessons, and I've been trying to learn them for a long time. So it's not easy. I'm not saying that what I'm talking about is an easy path to walk, because I know from personal experience it's not. And I'm still here like everybody else. I haven't ascended into some magical heaven because I still have things to learn. I still have emotions to discipline. But the idea is that you understand. Once you have understanding, then your horizons broaden with that understanding. Wisdom manifests, and you automatically start doing better. And of course, you have been doing better lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Otherwise, in this lifetime, you wouldn't be asking these questions. We have moved from the children who could only be taught in parable stories over 2,000 years ago to the people who are asking the questions, yes, but what was Christ really about in this time frame? And between then and now, we have all had many, many incarnations, and in each one we have learned. So now we are asking the adult question. And what I am saying to you is, because we are asking those questions, we are ready to hear the answers. And you know, it's the old story, when the pupil is ready, the teacher will appear. And right. I believe at this moment in time that the teacher who has appeared to teach us how to do this is that Dr. Ledwith, Michael Ledwith, who wrote the book Saving Jesus, because that book is like an instruction manual taking you to the next level if that's where you wish to go. But we have to be willing to be open-minded and not clinging on desperately to our past teaching and training. We have to be able to say, okay, that served me well for 2,000 years, but now maybe I'm ready for more. If you don't feel you're ready for more, that's fine. That teaching will carry you over to another incarnation. But if you're tired of going round and round the wheel, then now is the time to open your mind to a different view.
So Michael Ledwith, in the book Saving Jesus, he covers the points that you just covered, right? Yes, okay.
Yes.
So
well,
Paul was right.
How to do it.
He's showing people how to do it. How, okay. Yes. Paul in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 through 13, he talks about love. So he was right about the essential character and nature of human beings should all be about loving and caring, sharing, and helping each other. Can we say it that way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There are getting back to the Creator, evolving back to God, advancing to become a fully fledged immortal has railroad tracks leading to it. And just like railroad tracks, there's two sides, two lines. One line is unconditional love and the other is humility. You can't have one without the other. And those are the twin tracks that carry you back to the Creator. You know, we have a long way to go, all of us. There are many, many layers of creation, many levels of understanding. It's like a great mountain that we're climbing or an endless ladder that we're going up. And on each rung of the ladder, each life of experience, we learn new things. And in that process of learning, we advance up the ladder. Now, sometimes in order to learn things very important to us, we actually take ourselves back down a step. In other words, we give ourselves a lifetime with less awareness than we had in the time before. But we do it for a reason. We don't naturally fall back. We keep moving forward because even taking that step, it's rather like if somebody is offered a big promotion at work and they think about it and then they say to the boss, no, I don't think I'm ready for that. I want another year at this level before I accept that promotion. Kind of like that. We do have that option. We have the option to stay back a year for a do-over and then move forward, so to speak. But essentially, it's an ever-upward climb spiral going up. And up is our way of using it. There's neither up nor down, obviously, in eternal sense. Returning back to the source from which we came. Moving into the eternal light. This is the way we go. This is how we have to do it. Unconditional love and humility.
I'm where I speak through the times of men and of angels. Huh?
Yes,
exactly. You said what?
Exactly. That's absolutely true. And, you know, we're a sounding brass. As I just said, I don't know if you heard me, but I am still working very hard on both those aspects, and I've no idea how many more lifetimes it's going to take me to actually learn unconditional love and humility. But it is something that we all should be aspiring to, and we have to make sure that we don't do it in a hypocritical way. You know, Spirit once said to me, when I was talking to them one evening about forgiveness, this is years, 40, 50 years ago. And I said, well, you know, talk to me about forgiveness. Tell me your views on that. And they just laughed and they said, you know, two things. Love is for, in other words, you give it. You give it. You don't seek it. You give it. So love is for giving. If you're giving love, that takes care of it, right? And the other thing that they said about it was, well, how did they put it? It's kind of the phrase they used has gone out of my mind, and I really don't want to paraphrase them. But they were teaching about the art of being loving and being forgiving. Oh, yes, I know. And they said to me, the Creator would sooner for an axe murderer than he would a hypocrite. And that gave me pause for thought for a long time. And I thought, what? You know, that sounds crazy. Not that I don't take it for granted that the Creator forgives everything, because ultimately it's all his creation. And so, of course, he'll forgive everything. But the idea that in the scale of things, hypocrisy was a bigger sin than killing somebody with an axe. And this is what the angelic beings were telling me. That sounded a bit extreme until I thought about it. Hypocrisy is self-delusion, and it comes out of our ego. So when we are doing our best to follow good, to follow life with good, to try and be good, kind and good and loving to our friends and our neighbors, make sure that we do it honestly. In other words, don't run around doing things you really don't want to do, because, and then say, well, you know, I'm doing good here because I'm doing X, Y, and Z, when actually you're hating every minute of doing it. There is no real goodness in that. It would be better if you said, No, I can't do that right now. I don't want to do that. Thank you very much. That's not lacking in goodness or being selfish. That's being honest. And so the only way we are going to get on those two tracks of unconditional love and humility are living our lives with objective honesty at soul level. Our inner self telling us what we know is right and wrong, and following that and judging ourselves, or not judging, but measuring ourselves, measuring our behavior against whether it is honest behavior or not. And apparently, according to these beings of spirit, apparently you can really move forward at a very fast level if you are 100% honest in all your dealings with your life, in everything that you do, even if, you know, it doesn't mean that you have the right to go out and express your opinion and hurt other people's feelings. In those instances, you should be self-disciplined enough to keep your mouth shut, right? So you can't say what you think. Say what you think is not necessarily the same thing as being objectively honest. Looking at a situation, knowing what you think honestly, and then also knowing that if you say that, that's going to damage somebody else in some way, then you simply don't say it. It is more honest to say nothing than to harm another person deliberately. You might say things unintentionally. We all do, right? I certainly do, you know, put my foot in it every time. But that's unintentional. That's forgivable. It's not forgivable to say unkind things to deliberately hurt other people. But you can't pretend to be kind. You can't pretend to be sweetness and light. And inside you're absolutely horrible and seething. Because that's not honest. That's very dishonest. And we have to, if we're going to get anywhere near reaching unconditional love, we have to be honest. Honest with ourselves and honest with our dealings with the world, all the world.
Mm-hmm. That's a good description, except that when I think of raising children or when you are in charge of a group of people, be it a pastor, be it somebody who's helping others to grow and develop on this planet called Earth, sometimes you have to tell the truth. I mean, even though it's tough, it may rub somebody wrong, isn't it better to tell them the truth rather than not tell them the truth in terms of behavior, activities, and taking responsibility about what they do to other people.
But you're talking, I was talking about in life in general.
You're talking
about when that person is fulfilling the specific role of advisor. And in this situation, you tell the truth, or you always tell the truth. Either you say nothing or you tell the truth, right? So when you're acting in the role of advisor, then that person is asking for your help. And it's, again, Jesus lays the road for this when he says, ask and you shall receive. So if somebody asks you for help, you give them the help. And if that truth is a tough truth for them to hear, it's still going to be a help to them, right? So if you are responding to somebody's request for help, and the help, you know, you're in the role of the parent, of the minister, of the advisor, then you tell the truth. Now, there are occasions with children where that varies a little bit. This is kind of what I'm talking about when I said we were all children 2,000 years ago and now we're adults, right? So you translate that in this way. Today, you have a child. They're 4 or 5 years old. They're all excited because it's nearly Christmas. And who comes at Christmas? Father Christmas comes at Christmas. And what does he do? Well, if you've been a good boy or girl, he's going to give you presents. Wonderful. Same time, hopefully, that child is also getting read stories about Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus, and it's his birthday we're celebrating. And because we're celebrating and we've been good, Father Christmas is going to bring us some presents, right? That's the Christmas story, which is only half true. It has essentially a falsehood in it that you are telling a four-year-old. When they get to 8 or 9 and they start saying, well, who's Father Christmas? Who's Father Christmas? Or the other kids are telling them there isn't Father Christmas and they come home crying about it. You say, well, the real Father Christmas was a saint called Saint Nicholas in a Scandinavian country long, long time ago. And at Christmas, to celebrate in recognition of the birth of Jesus, the children put their shoes outside the door. And if they'd been good children, St. Nicholas would go around the town leaving them little gifts in their shoes. And so it became a tradition that to celebrate the birth of Christ, you get gifts from somebody who cares about you and who loves you. So yes, maybe Father Christmas is a sort of myth now, a made-up, a pretend person. But your mummy and daddy love you, and so we get the gifts for you at Christmas. In other words, the child is growing up. You expand the story. When they are full adults, 14, 15, you say, well, you know there's no Father Christmas, and maybe the finances of the family are not great this year, so, you know, you won't be getting your usual pile of Christmas presents. In other words, you move into the truth as the child is ready for it. And what I'm saying is that's what has happened to the human race in the last 2,000 years when we first heard the parables, unlike the disciples who were taught full truth then. When we heard the parables, we were like children. But through the incarnations and the years that have passed, we have grown. And now we are ready for the expanded truth of Christ and his presence. We are ready to understand, yes, he was a God, and I put that with a small g, because he could do God-like things, because he mastered death, because he was an immortal who can step on and off the planet, in and out of a body at will, because he is this great, incredible, magnificent being who is Lord, King, and ruler of this whole quadrant of the universe that his father gave to him as his kingdom and his place of rulership. And he has been coming back onto this planet in physical form, according to my understanding, since 1998. And he's on and off the planet in various locations doing various things at this time. And we'll be making a full comeback in the next 2 or 3 years. So, yes, all these things are true about him. But the great thing that he taught is that you can be just like him. You can become an immortal being. You can master death. You can never need this cycle of reincarnation again, but be able to create a body at will whenever you want to or need to be on a planet. Not just this planet, but any planet of your choosing within his kingdom and probably even beyond that. So these things are all true. And there is nothing better to cling to. You know, when there's a storm at sea, you hold on, you tie yourself with a rope and you cling on to a life belt in case you need it. Well, I'm saying to you, tie yourself to the all, the source, the creator. Imagine there's a rope from the creator tied to you and it never breaks. It's an unending, unbreakable rope that your soul is permanently tied to. And then hang on for a life belt while you are experiencing in this planet the teachings of Jesus Christ, because he taught you how to become like him, how to become an immortal. And sadly, most of the religions, they've thrown the idea of following Christ and becoming Christ-like and reaching Christ consciousness. They've thrown this idea out, but they have also told you that you can only do it and achieve that the way they tell you. And the way they tell you is the package of the belief structures that the churches, various churches, but particularly the Roman Church, have put together and saying you have to believe what we tell you, otherwise you will go to hell and damnation, right? But that's not what Christ said. That's nothing like Christ said. First of all, he never threatened anybody with hell and damnation. Not that I can recall anywhere. Indeed, he gave the Lord's Prayer. And the Lord's Prayer says, you know, protect us from evil. Save us from our temptations and protect us from evil. We are protected from the dark side just by asking and using on a regular basis the Lord's Prayer. Because remember, Christ said, ask and you will receive. So when you say the Lord's Prayer, you're asking. You're asking for your daily bread. You're asking to be protected from evil. You're asking to not be tempted by the things of life. You're asking. So therefore, that's what you will receive. And so long as you understand that, then that is faith. And it doesn't depend on somebody dying for you, because nobody else can die for you, ever. You have to die for yourself. You have to live for yourself, and you have to die for yourself. And during this eternal process of living and dying, right, you learn. You have opportunities for learning. And we right now, because of happening in the cosmos physically and everything that is changing on the frequencies of the world and our bodies, the whole thing, this frequency shift that is going on now and is actually creating a lot of the chaos, unfortunately, this is our great opportunity. So let's grasp it. And it's easy to grasp. It's not a stinging nettle that's going to burn us. It's like a rose with thorns. It's like a rose without any thorns. And we just need to grasp it in our hands and say, yes, this is what I want. This is what my soul desires. I desire at some point to be returned to the source as part of the original creation. But for now, what I desire is to understand the teachings of Christ, not the teachings of the church, not the packages of all the various religions that are all over the place, but the actual things that Christ taught us. And if you don't read well, or you don't happen to have a Bible, or you don't read the Bible, that's fine with me. I'm no bibliophile. Although I understand it well, because I was around when a lot of it was being written. But if you don't read a lot, then just get the Beatitudes. Get somebody to print out or write out yourself the Sermon on the Mount, which is a list of blessings that are given. Blessed are the poor, blessed are the meek, blessed are the peacemakers, right? See where you fit in there. Maybe you're one of the poor, maybe you're one of the meek, right? It doesn't matter. Somewhere you fit in there, because the Sermon on the Mount encloses all humanity. And it says we are all blessed. Blessed are they who are humans. That's us. We are humans and we are blessed because Christ came and taught us how to go beyond being humans on the planet, going the round of reincarnation, which is hard work, right? And repeated lives and deaths, which can be extremely unpleasant at times. Moving ourselves from that mouse wheel round and round and round forever into immortal beings where we can return to the planet in physical form anytime we wish and live on this planet and be happy and be helpful, be useful, have good lives. And isn't this what we all want? We don't have to be rich to be happy. We can be happy with very little, almost nothing. We can be happy, right? But we can also be happy when we have everything we ever wanted. The thing is that when we have risen to that frequency level where we are immortals, our happiness comes from work. And the work is whatever we are doing that benefits other people and helps them to move forward as we ourselves have moved forward. And this is what Christ is teaching over and over again. Everything he did, we can do and more.
That's John 14:12. Mm. Here's a pastor. His name is Jennings, Baptist preacher. Let's listen to him for just less than a minute and comment, please.
Word. Every church organization in the whole world, your bishops, your pastors, your overseers.
Amen.
You can call himself an apostle, I don't care. If he's not baptized and you not baptized in the name of Jesus Christ, it doesn't matter the position you hold in the church, you're still in your sins.
That's right.
Who, Pastor Jennings? Everybody.
Everybody.
You're still in your sins.
That's right.
Unless you're baptized in the name of Jesus Christ.
Right.
Don't you hear Peter say it got to be done for the remission?
For the remission of sins.
Remission means removal.
Right.
For the removal.
Right.
Remission of sins is for the removal of your sins.
That's right.
Amen. Okay. Comment. Your chance to comment on this.
Well, of course, my first comment has to be that I believe you said this was a Baptist minister.
He is.
And, of course, the Baptists believe that John the Baptist was the Savior, not Jesus Christ. That's the first comment I would make. Because that's why they're called Baptists, because they follow John, not Jesus. So they're followers of John the Baptist. Fair enough. The big, big comment, though, that I would say, and I say it very loud and clear, this man is preaching a teaching which is not Christian. Because for starters, he is excluding two-thirds of the world who are not Christian, right? The Hindus, the Baptists, right? The Hindus, the Chinese, the Orientals, the Asians, the Japanese, many, many, two-thirds of the world are not traditional Christians. That's the first thing. So he's excluding them from salvation. And then he is also raving about you being in sin. And I'm sorry, I just am not into that sinner thing, right? There are dark, evil things, sadly, on this planet, and way too much. The darkness and evil on this planet in this day and age is worse than it has ever been in our history. And that's it. I'm making a true statement then. And I've lived through most of that history. So I see how dark everything is. But we are not all living in sin. Sin is the manifestation of, which leads to the manifestation of evil. Now, I doubt if all those people who are attending that man's church have actually done any evil in their lives. Evil is dark. It's destructive. It's terrible, right? And it's certainly plenty of it on the planet today. But it's not the little mistakes that most of us make in life. We all do things which the church are ready to pounce on for sin. You know, if you're a Catholic, it's venial sin, it's mortal sin that's going to send you to hell and damnation. It's, oh, this is so wrong. It is so anti the source. And I'll tell you for why. Because most people do not set out to do something really bad. People who set out to do something really bad and then love doing it, they are evil. They are living, they are in sin. They're sinful people. They're evil. But the majority of us never set out with the intent of doing something bad. We do bad things by mistake. We do make errors of judgment and make those mistakes. And sometimes they are very harmful. And sometimes we make these kind of wrong mistakes in our lives quite blithely and cheerfully as we go along, because it's only with hindsight that we can look back and say, oh, what a wicked thing I did then. What a bad thing. What a mistake I made. But there are two things about that. One, you recognize that it was a mistake and you are sorry for it. You didn't intend to do it in the first place. It was a genuine error. These are not putting you in a state of sin. That's just not true. It's in a state of error, of mistakes. And why do we come to this planet as humans in the first place? Because everything on the physical world is transient. It's changing. It's temporary. This life is temporary. 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years, it's temporary. You're starting to die from the moment you're born. There is nothing permanent about life on Earth. So what purpose does it serve? Well, the purpose it serves is that it gives us sensory experiences and a place with other humans to exercise our free will. And by making the choices that we do in the exercise of our free will, we learn. Earth is a learning experience for all of us, time after time. And during those experiences, we make some pretty terrible mistakes sometimes. Pretty terrible. I mean, just think of all the women out there who've fallen in love with this, you know, oh, I've fallen madly in love, I have to marry him. They marry him and find out he's a drug addict and a wife beater. Wasn't that a big mistake, right? But was it a sin to do it? No, of course not. They didn't intentionally marry a drug addict and a wife beater. If they realized in time, they probably wouldn't have married him, right? So most of the things in normal people's lives, and that is like 99.9% of us, because it's only that very tiny, teeny tiny number, you know, one in a million, who is a psychopath and who does evil because they love evil, right? That's not the majority of us. The majority of us are living our lives the best way we can, and we are learning from our mistakes. And we are sorry we made those mistakes. We're sorry if it hurt other people. We're sorry if it hurt ourselves. We're sorry for it. We wish we hadn't done it. Another time around, we won't make the same mistake twice, right? That does not make us sinners. That makes us students in a school where we are learning, and it's a very tough school. Life on this planet is a hard-knock school, and it is through these experiences and these mistakes that we make that we have the biggest forward movement in our learning. So please, I beg you, stop punishing yourself. If you are one who goes to a church with a preacher like that, stop listening. Stop telling yourself you're a great big sinner. Take yourself down off that cross and start being the shining star that you really are. Because we all have the light of the divine within us. We are created from a divine spark of life. And it is our mistakes that can be very wrong sometimes. Some of us do some very wrong things. But that means that we need to be more sorry and promise not to do it again. Just remember, we are learning. If you're making wicked, sinful mistakes all the time, well, you sure haven't learned very much. But if you're a normal human being, just making the usual mistakes with the ups and downs of life, then stop calling yourself a sinner. Because I promise you, in the sight of the creation, you're not a sinner. Indeed, you are somebody who is more loved. You're like the prodigal son. God loved the master loved the prodigal son when he came home.
Right, right.
More than he loved the son who stayed home. So,
true. You want to get a drink of water? You want to get a drink of water?
That's better. The sanctimonious minister who is standing up, screaming at his congregation, you're all a bunch of sinners. You're wallowing in sin. You'll go to hell and damnation unless you are baptized the way I tell you. Right?
All right. Well, he, along with other ministers, say the same thing. Here's another minister. I think he says basically the same thing. His name is Kenneth Copeland. Very popular.
Spiritual leaders have built lucrative empires comparable to the dynasties previously enjoyed by star athletes, rappers, A-list actors, and corporate
leaders.
Most pastors utilize more money.
Let me tell you. Now, let me do this. One minister was talking about the gifting in the church, giving him money.
Yes.
And if you don't give him enough money, he's not happy with you. Listen.
I'm not worth your McDonald's money.
Come on.
I'm not worth your Red Lobster money.
Come on.
I ain't worth your St. John knit. Y'all can't afford it no how. I ain't worth y'all Louis Vuitton.
Come on.
I ain't worth your Prada.
Come on.
I'm not worth your Gucci. Mother, I'm saying this, and I promise you, Deacon, it's not with respect of want. I'm saying it because I want you to understand just what God is saying. I even found out that Movado, you can buy a Movado watch in Sam's.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
And y'all know I asked for one last year. Here it is the whole way in August. I still ain't got it. Y'all ain't saying nothing. Let me kick down the door and talk to my cheap sons and daughters. See, that's how I know you still poor, broke, busted, and disgusted, because of how you've been honoring me.
So they didn't give the watch he wants or the plane he wants. And here's another guy. I'll do this while you get some water. He's talking about he wants this plane that costs, $40,000, $40 million or whatever.
Buffalo Dollar owns a $70 million Gulfstream G650 private jet. The Gulfstream G650 isn't just any private jet. It is the holy grail of luxury private jets. The Gulfstream G650 is a twin-engine business jet airplane produced by Gulfstream Aerospace. It is considered to be the best private jet money can buy. This jet is the biggest, fastest, most luxurious, longest range, and most technologically advanced jet. He purchased this jet after church members contributed $300 to buy the man of God the pricey jet. Rolls-Royce. Creflo Dollar owns two Rolls-Royces, the one he said was a surprise gift given by the donors or church members. The other he personally bought it. His two Rolls-Royce Ghost that costs over $500,000. He rolls in style. That 12, which is under the bonnet of the car, carries power and presence. The Rolls-Royce is one of the most exotic cars in the world, and recently top celebrities across the globe have found a special love towards its popular offering, the Ghost.
Okay, comment on the expensive plane.
First of all, there is no excuse for this. Anyone, let me turn this around. Let's leave the preachers alone. They'll have to account for their own sins, and they surely are wallowing in sin when they're standing up telling such lies to their congregation. So, you know, I used to say when I was a young girl, and I've been to a few churches at the time and listened to different preachers, and I said to a friend, I think when we die, we will find that hell is full of church ministers, preachers, priests, because they stand up every Sunday and in their pulpits and tell such lies to their congregations. They are liars. And that goes for all of them. I make no exception, even the good ones, because the good ones have spent years and years in seminary studying the Bible and studying their religion, whatever it is, and then just not telling the truth to the people. And they have to know the truth. They have to know what our Lord said, because it's written down in the New Testament. And I am assured by Spirit that despite the multiple translations of the Bible, over the centuries, the scribes doing the translations were most particular to carefully translate the words attributed to Christ. So they are as near to what Christ said as we're ever going to get. And we can actually get nearer if we read the Proverbs and sayings of the Desert Fathers and of the Coptic Orthodox Church, because they were written down in the first 100 years after Christ. Most of the other works are not written down until 200 or more years beyond that. So we need to get looking just at the words of attributed to Christ himself and see what he says. Now, these ministers out there and their congregations, let me say this. If any of us choose to be a member of one of those kind of congregations, then we are either not using our God-given brains to see that we are being scammed left, right, and center for our money and nothing else, or we are deluding ourselves because we don't want to do the work that we know we need to do on ourselves in order to spiritually progress. It's much easier to join like these evangelical churches that have a couple of thousand people in the audience, you know, at these big revivals and things. It's not unusual for 1,000, 2,000 people to show up at these things. Get in the middle. That's a mob. That's not a congregation. That's a mob. And in the middle of that mob, when they're all shouting their hallelujahs and whatever else they're shouting, right, you are just, you're not attending to your soul. And you're not attending to love of God. You are simply attending to the rest of the mob. You're following the lowest common denominator and yelling along with everybody else. Now, one of those ministers you just had on said, God told me. Well, here I just want to make a little comment. If you are referring to the one we call God with a capital G, right? Big G-O-D, the source of all creation, the source of everything, the all, the creator, the ultimate something that created everything. I don't know how he's talking to him, considering that there is apparently not a single being in this entire universe of sentient beings who as yet knows who or what the source is of all this creation. Nobody knows. So when they say, well, God is this, that, and the other, and God's talking to me and telling me this, it's a load of hogwash. Nobody knows who or what God is. We surmise that it is a matter of love with because of its expression of creation. And love is like Carl Sagan spoke of the universe, and he said he believed there were some kind of hooks out there that held all the universe together. Call that unconditional love. I would call those hooks that hold it all together unconditional love. And I would say that the relationship, to make it understandable in modern words, modern language, the relationship between the source, the creator of all, which we do not and cannot know really, because it would be an oxymoron to say with finite brains you can understand the infinite. You can't. But you can get an idea of it if I describe it in terms of quantum mechanics, quantum physics, and the entanglement of quantum particles. Because no matter how far apart those two particles are, when they are entangled, they are eternally connected. And as one is, so is the other. So if you imagine that although we cannot understand or comprehend the Creator truly, if you imagine that if you are permanently connected, if the Creator is all and everything and you are part of it, which we do know, I think, if we believe anything, we understand that there is one, everything is one, right? Then if we are one half of an entangled particle, the divine spark within our soul is one half of an entangled particle, and the other half is the creative force, with the creative force, then we can know two things. One, that the Creator is always connected to us. We are never separated. We might turn our backs on the Creator, but we are never separated from the Creator. And the other thing we can learn is that everything that we experience, the Creator also experiences. And everything that we can understand, the Creator always understands. It's a two-way street. And that tells us that the Creator, who or what the Creator is originally, is learning through our experiences, as in the sense of the macrocosm, as we are learning and experiencing as within the microcosm. We are the tiny particles or drops of seawater, and the Creator is like the ocean. So everything that we learn, the Creator knows. And so we can also understand, have that understanding as we see the creation and we see the things of love and beauty and caring, the best of the creation, the best of the of humanity. We can maybe get a glimpse of what our Creator must be like, that he would create these things, that he would take the time and trouble to work out how to make butterflies, and which are beautiful things, or roses, or trees, or humans, right? So we can recognize that connection between the Creator and us, but we do not know the Creator as a person, and we cannot talk and have a conversation. So when that minister says that God, he's telling him that you're a bunch of sinners, he's lying to you. He's lying to you every step of the way.
But there are a lot of ministers who will get in the church pulpit these days and have for many, many, many decades, centuries, if you will, saying, God told me to come here and to deliver a message. Here's one.
Number 8, Pat Robertson. With an estimated net worth of $100 million, Pat Robertson is among the richest pastors in America. He is the founder of the Christian Broadcasting Network in Virginia. He also runs a large number of companies committed to promoting conservative Christian ideals. All this has contributed positively to his huge net worth of over $100 million. Number 7, Benny Hinn. Benny Hinn has an estimated net worth of $42 million. He is best known for his regular Miracle Crusades, which are broadcasted worldwide on his television program, This Is Your Day. Benny Hinn has been scrutinized for personal use of his church-owned luxury goods and a lack of financial oversight.
So many of these ministers started out poor, broke, dejected. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that first one mentioned, what's his name? The first minister was just on there. Peterson, is it?
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Yes, that first minister who was just on that clip. What's his name? Patterson or Peterson, something? What's his name?
There's so many out there. Robinson.
Yeah, he
Bennington,
is. Well,
Swagger.
Yeah, that one who was...
Kenneth Copeland.
The one he's, who was on first. Right?
Okay. Kenneth Copeland.
Not Kenneth Copeland. The one
Pat Robinson?
Who has that.
Pat Robinson.
That's it.
Okay.
Pat
or
Roberts. Might have acquired $100 million in his personal assets at this point in time. Right? And I'm sure people have given it to him. Because here's the thing. First, he sticks. I happen to know because I've listened to him a few times. He sticks to the basic Christian message of basically do unto others as you would be done by. Love your neighbor. Da, da, da. The basic Christian message. He doesn't go screaming at people that they're wallowing in sin and going to hell. He does not do that. He sticks to the basic Christian message. And secondly, his ministry has... and I know he takes, donations from all over because he has a big television ministry, right? His ministry actually does provide for services and help to people all over the world. He has things like, providing water wells in drought desert areas, building villages, taking in children who've been orphaned with AIDS. He truly has a ministry. Now, I might not agree always with his message, but there are two sides to the things, and Christ told you this. By their works they are known. So his works, I know, for this world, for a lot of poor people around this world, have been very good works. He has done, and I'm sure there are many other ministers out there as well, so you have to balance what they are saying. And when they stick to a basic Christian message, even if it's within a church that puts boundaries on their parishioners, and I would say take away the boundaries, right? If the message is a basic Christian message, the message of Christ, right, then that Christ was giving to the people when he was out preaching the parables and so on, then that's, I can live with that, so can anybody, because they are still teaching about Christ and they are still doing a lot of good work on the planet. The ones that I'm sorry that they don't expand their own understanding, so they stop worrying about accruing wealth for themselves and start telling people, hey, keep your money. I just need enough to live on. And meantime, this is the true message of Christ, right? In other words, I think they are pretty near knowing what the true message is, and they just don't want to look any further because it will change the material game for them. And remember, the Bible teaches us we cannot serve God and Mammon at the same time, and you can't. So if you're worrying about accruing a massive fortune and at the same time preaching about God, it's not possible. You can't do it. So some of these ministers out there are still doing enough good work with the massive amounts of money they take in. And it's not for me to sit in judgment on any of them, right? But I will stand up and shout loudly against those who tell people that they are deep in sin, and if they don't do what this particular minister tells them, they will go to hell. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm so willing to shout loud about that is because those ministers are not following Christ, and they are not teaching the message of Christ. They are teaching their own self-aggrandizement message, the one that strokes their own ego, the one that makes them famous and on the television or wherever they want to be. That's not the message of Christ. Never was, never will be.
When Jesus said he would be back, he said, I come back, I'm to being a sword. Can you talk about that? Let's talk about that.
Well, I can, but and I'm happy to do it. But I have to give some history first, if I may.
Okay, sure, of course, by all means.
So that people really understand. This is, I've already talked about second level truth of Christ's message, what he was teaching his disciples, basically, you can do everything I can do and more and become a true immortal and get off the round of reincarnation. That's first come the parables, stories for children. Then come the one that I just stated for getting off the cycle of reincarnation. Well, then the next level of understanding has to be who our beloved Lord Jesus Christ is, was, and always will be. And in order to arrive at that, I have to just throw in a little bit of history. In the universe, there are a race of beings that we have come to commonly call now the Anunnaki or the Anunna. The Bible tells us that in the early days of this creation, angelic beings were created by the Creator and sent down to examine and observe and report on the creation. Now, these were pure beings of light, true, and angel means messenger, of course. These were true angelic light messengers that came down to the physically newly created creation, observed it, and most of them went back to the source they came from, wherever that is. They went back there and they reported to the Creator and they stayed with the Creator. A large number of them stayed within the creation and continued their observations as the creation evolved. And through millions and millions, even billions of years, eons of time, great epochs, when planets have burst, and solar systems have come into being, and beings have evolved on them and developed high civilizations which have come to fruition and died out because their sun died, and that whole planetary experience went into extinction and new ones came into being. And throughout these eons of time, these great angelic beings who of light who were observing this gradually themselves became more and more involved with the material creation, more and more dense in their being, more solid. Instead of us being able to see through them, we could now see them physically, and they became physically more and more dense. So when you went into more recent history, say just a few million years ago, the beginnings, let's say, of the solar system, when planet Earth came into existence, and these beings were then living in physical form, albeit somewhat different to ours, but nonetheless looking like us, a physical form that very much looked like us, but was bigger, and they were living on a planet. And they came down to this planet and they took the existing human species on this planet, and for the first time in their history, they decided that when they saw the way humans were developing on this planet, it was maybe time after all these millions and millions of years to finally try and help one of these evolving species and help themselves at the same time, because they were in need of some form of labor force, and the humans were in need of a mental uplift, a grade level, if you like, to move them forward, to advance them as sentient beings. So the Anuna did genetic engineering on an Earth human, and this resulted in Homo sapiens. It went from Homo erectus that were then walking the earth and living in small tribal communities using tools. We went from Homo erectus to Homo sapiens. And by the way they did that was to remove 4 genes from the human genome and put 2 of their own genes in. Now, you remember back at the beginning of this little story, I told you these were beings of light, directly made by the Creator and put whole into the creation as observers or watchers, right? And you find reference to them as watchers in the Bible. Or the Nephilim is another term that is used. And so what they did by putting 2 genes into the human genome, they raised us not just in intelligence, but in potential. Potentially, we can become like them, eternal beings, immortal beings, beings who can live forever, beings who can live in and out of bodies at will. Am I describing Jesus Christ to you? Yes, I am.
Yes.
Because he is one of those great beings. He is an eternal being, the first created, the brightest and most beautiful of the Creator's creations that came down with those angelic beings into the creation. And they all still, or almost all of them, because it's not, when they became more dense, it did become possible in extreme situations to kill them. And it's very, very difficult, right? But they came down into the creation, and Christ was one of them. That's why I said, yes, he's a God with a small g. He truly is a reflection of the Creator, an aspect of the Creator, as we all are in lesser degree. And that's why Christ is saying to us, now we have this eternal being gene in our human genome, put there by the Anunnaki all those generations to go, and which is now spread throughout the entire human species, that yes, we can do everything he does and more. We too can become eternal beings. And that also tells us another thing, because even Anunnaki, by becoming more and more dense throughout the generations, have become degenerated in themselves. They are no longer the original shining beings that they are, and about half of them want to go back to that, and the other half like being the way they are now, physical beings living in a physical universe but still not dying. They have long, long immortal lives but in a physical body, and they like that. So half of them want to stay in this creation. The other half want to go out of it and back to where they came from. And those who want to come back include the one that we knew as Jesus Christ, because he took on that role to be the Christ child for us so that he could teach us and give us that opportunity to become like them, to evolve into immortal beings who have mastered death and can live forever. And so while the planet exists and the creation is it as it is, any of us in any state we'll keep getting the cycles of reincarnation over and over. We'll keep getting bodies and another opportunity, another body, another opportunity, another life, another life. This goes on so long as there is a physical creation for it to go on in. What Christ is offering us is something much greater than that. He is offering us the opportunity to become immortal. But in the Bible, he tells us, right, that when I come back bringing a sword, I am not bringing peace, I am bringing a sword. And that is because the last time he came to teach us, 100 years ago, the arrangement that he made upstairs, you might say, is that he would give up everything he had, all his magnificence, all his everything, and come down here and be born in a reincarnational cycle as a normal human infant baby. But there were one or two conditions on him doing this. One, that he would bring full consciousness with him. All his knowledge, all his memories, everything would be in that body when he was born. And the other thing was that he understood only too well that he was going to bring the teaching of salvation. Ching was not accepted by the teachers. In other words, the Sanhedrin of the Jewish people, because he was being born in that Jewish lineage of David, right? And there was a reason for that. In that time frame, he knew that if the Jewish teachers themselves, the rabbis, did not accept his teaching, then to protect their own value, they would probably kill the messenger. And so he made the arrangement that if they kill me, I will be obedient to this contract I'm making. I will do what I am promising to do. I will go and I will teach them the message of salvation, how they can save themselves and become eternal beings. But if they reject me and kill me, then you, the overriding council of this quadrant of the universe, have to guarantee me that I get to go back at a later date, take over my rightful place as ruler. And that's what he's doing. He's coming back as ruler because he is Lord, Master, and King of this quadrant. That was the gift to him from his father. And his father gave him this rulership. And that's what he's coming to do. He's coming to rule. So you can imagine that he's going to bring the sword, because the bad guys are really going to be in trouble.
But aren't we in trouble now with Ephesians saying that it's not about good or bad, it's about principalities that the war is being conducted on the surface of the earth?
The war on the surface is right now all over this earth is absolutely between good and evil. The evil is all these, what can I call them, divisionists that want to control other people's lives and have power for themselves. And that power is evil. It's the face of evil that we see. Are these power-hungry groups, and behind all of them on this planet, there is one, you might say, superpower that controls most of the wealth of this planet, most of the industry of this planet, and absolutely behind the scenes rules, totally unelected, not chosen by anybody, and they have generated that wealth and that power through generations in their families, generational families who have acquired wealth and power. Families, you see, you recognize what I'm saying if I say things like, look at royal families. Look at the royal families that still exist on this earth. And there are some royal families in many countries, not just, you know, you think, oh, the Queen of England. It's not just the Queen of England. There are other royal families.
Yes.
The royal families in Asia, in Thailand, in many countries of the world. Sembilan Negri has a royal family. Many countries have royal families that are hereditary families that have gained wealth and power for hundreds, if not thousands of years, right? And some of them have been good to their people and some of them not good to the people. You also see the generational families that you, even if you just go back to the Middle Ages and the bankers, the Lombardy bankers in Italy, you know, that started Lombard's Bank from Lombardy, right? That goes back way to the beginnings almost of the Roman Church, back to the time of the early popes. Who was that pope who was the great warrior and created the Holy Roman Empire and put King Charles of Spain in charge of it and controlled the whole of Europe with it? These, the descendants of these families are the ones secretly behind, not, they're not doing it a secret, actually, that's a mistake to say, but they are not known to everybody. They are not commonly known people, and that's because they never mix with the common people. They only mix with their own kind. And there are three or four hundred of these families living on the planet today who have generationally accrued wealth and power, who actually run things. And then you have the what you might call the nouveau riche, the people like the Clintons and the Gates, who are trying to get their foot in the door. They do it mostly by having been members of something like the Skull and Bones Society at Yale, or you know, these fraternities that they have in the universities all over the world. I mean, Skull and Bones is a very well-known one, but they're all over. In Britain, it's Eton. Anybody who goes to Eton College and They're the same kind of people. And
they are the Illuminati, the Bilderbergers, the Trilateral, the people who are the cabal.
And even those behind them, the cabal behind all those groups that we hear about, the NSA, the United Nations, the CDC, the World Health, all these organizations are offshoots of this behind-the-scenes group. And one of the big one now, of course, is the WEF, the World Economic Forum, with that dreadful man Schwab behind it. And then, of course, George Soros is one of the ones that's behind it. These are all the money machine behind things. And these are the front faces that we all hear about in the news and on the television. But behind them is an even deeper inner core of these very ancient, historically ancient family lineages that control things. Absolutely keep a tight grip on everything. And we out there, we in the general public, who only know these people by the newspapers and the televisions, we are their slave labor force. And this is why they are currently wanting and working with, through pandemics, so-called pandemics, a massive population reduction, because they don't want this group of people that numbers maybe a few tens of thousands, maybe a few million, right? They don't want all this labor force. They want to take it down so we, their labor force, are only those that fill their needs, that will service them. They don't want the planet full of people. They want just enough people to do what they need to be in service to them. And whether we realize it or not, we are all slaves to these people. And every time we do what they tell us, we are slaves to these people. And I am of the opinion that there is very likely, if not here already, very quickly coming, some kind of maybe a nanoparticle or something of that nature in our vaccines against the COVID, right? There is no time in history or no terrible, terrible disease, including one of the worst, which was smallpox. If you've ever seen, as a nurse, I have nursed all these diseases in my times living and working in the tropics. So I have seen them all. And I will tell you something that's true that nobody knows, right? Or very few people know. The World Health Organization, along with your local, your CDC or whatever your national organization is, when they have a vaccination program and they've done whatever they want to do with their program, and they have killed off most of the disease, but they haven't eradicated it. Like smallpox, they tell you they eradicated smallpox in 19, whatever the date was. But that's not true. They know that that virus, as all viruses, exist on a planetary scale. They're either in the air or in the earth or in the animals or in the people. They exist. They're part of the creation on this planet. There is no new virus except the ones they create in the laboratories. They all, these viruses and bacteria, they all live on this planet. They're all part of the creation. So what the World Health does, they have a vaccination. They maybe get a vaccine like they did for smallpox. They vaccinate millions of people. The people stop dying from smallpox. They say, okay, we've eradicated it. From the day they make that statement, smallpox then became, and if I remember right, I think the name is something like pustular eczema. It's no longer called smallpox. It's called pustular eczema. And there are still outbreaks every year in various tropical countries. There may be in the States for all I know. But it's not eradicated. And they know they cannot eradicate any disease. So when they do a vaccine and they kill off a lot of it, the patients stop getting sick, then they change the name. They say we've eradicated it, and they call it by a new name from there on in. Now, with something like COVID, when that came out, that is a genetically altered bacteria that we get, the virus. Is genetically altered. It started out as SARS, SARS-1, then SARS-2, then some other kind of HN something influenza, and then it became down the line when they tinkered with it some more over in the Wuhan laboratory and at the Naval Research Laboratory here in America, these level 4 labs that are all over the world, right? And millions and millions and millions of our taxpayer dollars support these laboratories, up to last month, the one in Wuhan. And Dr. Mengele, Dr. Fauci has been in charge of the development of that particular bug for more than 20 years. Eugenics has been his lifelong career. How to alter human DNA using altered bacteria and also weaponizing these bacteria to kill off people in war situations, right? How to affect the enemy with massive doses of flu so they can't fight. That's their story. That's their excuse. That's what they will tell you, right? That is the reason why they do this. Well, this is now killing people, right? And there has never in the past been a vaccine, because COVID is not like any other vaccine. It's different. There's never been smallpox, diphtheria, whooping cough, chicken pox. I could name a dozen, right? They are made differently. They are designed specifically against one disease, and you need one shot, and you are protected for however long that protection lasts. Even with cholera, which is a devastating disease, one shot, and you're good for at least a year, living in the middle of a cholera outbreak in the tropics. And I've done it, right? So I know what I'm wishing to say here. And what I'm wishing to say is that the vaccines for COVID and the continuing need for booster after booster after booster is has never been done before and is absolutely outrageous. And our own common sense should tell us there's something not right about this. Well, my opinion is that this is what this inner group are choosing to aid depopulation. As well as attrition, they are giving us these shots to kill us. Well, they're not giving me, but anybody who's taking them, they're taking them. And I think now the people who have started to take them would actually get very sick if they got, if they came down again with COVID, because they've had the COVID injected into them, and they've also had these spike proteins and mRNA carriers, which are changing their DNA and destroying their immune system. So they, so in future, they're going to have less and less and less resistance, not just to COVID, but in fact to any disease, and particularly, I would think, respiratory diseases and airborne diseases like the influenzas or the pneumonias or so on. So far from giving more and more protection, I believe they are consistently weakening and weakening and weakening their bodies so that during the next 5 to 10 years, they will succumb to some other illness, and then they will tell you, well, you died of that illness. You only got the illness, in my opinion, because you'd already had all the shots. So I hope if anybody actually hears this, that they will start right away on protocols that can mitigate this for them, that can re-strengthen their immune system and go some way to correcting the damage that the shots have done for them. It's not a hopeless situation.
What protocol would you recommend? I mean, as we talk about this, what protocol for those individuals
I would recommend that you go online and look up the one that Dr. Ziegler put out. He died himself recently. Something else. I think he had a heart attack, I think. But he put out, and it's there to print out for you to follow. And I don't remember exactly what it was. But it's there, and you can print it out and follow his protocol. You can also contact any good PASIC doctor. That's a doctor with the initials ND after his name. Any good naturopathic doctor today is producing herbal combinations, and I have no idea what they are. They're a mystery to me. But they are producing them, and I know here in the valley, where I live in Montana, we have a wonderful doctor called Dr. Timothy Binder. And you can go onto his site, you know, or reach him at Dr. Timothy Binder. And he has a herbal mixture, which if you get sick, you take 10 drops 4 times a day. And if you are not sick, you just can, if you wish, you can take just 5 drops once a day as a preventative, so that you don't actually get sick. You don't contract these things. And he's also talking about, he has a treatment for people who have taken the shots that will help them correct in their bodies, will help to undo the damage. So a naturopathic doctor is what you want to see, and hunt around till you find a good one who is offering that treatment, or go online and find Dr. Ziegler's, which is partly natural and partly allopathic medicine, but does the same thing.
Okay, let's just take a listen to this lady. She's in the UK.
Have the vaccines, the life-saving vaccines, but they are not being used adequately everywhere. And thus, this costs, of course, an enormous health cost coming along. If you look at the numbers, we have now 77% of the adults in the European Union vaccinated, or if you take the whole population, it's 66%. And this means one-third of the European population is not vaccinated. These are 150 million people. This is a lot. And not each and everyone can be vaccinated, so there are very small children, for example, or people with special medical conditions, but the vast majority could. And therefore, I think it is understandable and appropriate to lead this discussion now, how we can encourage and potentially think about mandatory vaccination within the European Union. This needs discussion. This needs a common approach, but it is a discussion that I think has to be led.
Okay. So they want to vaccinate everybody in the world, so we got that. We got that picture.
Right. Yeah.
It won't cost you a dime. They'll do it free. As a matter of fact, they'll pay you to get vaccinated.
Right. And you see the evil sneakiness. I hope people pay attention to what is being said. She's talking about mandatory vaccination. She's wanting them to take a vote on mandatory, meaning they can force you to have injected into your body something, whether you want it or not. Now,
right.
That smacks to me about a fascism. But more than that, and here is where their cleverness comes in that makes them truly evil, these people. She's saying that there will be a terrible price to pay in the future of people getting sick if we don't do this. Well, what she's actually doing is laying the cover story from when all the millions start dying from having taken the vaccine. And if you notice now, they are telling you, right? And I have friends still, you know, working in Britain, right? Not working, but in touch, still stay in touch, who were in the medical thing, field in Britain. They're telling you now, everybody who is dying of COVID in the hospitals is unvaccinated. But when you actually talk to the doctors and nurses who are in the hospitals and willing to be honest with you, they tell you that not one in 10 of their patients is unvaccinated. They're all vaccinated. 90 who are now dying from COVID are the vaccinated. I have all, I can say, all my friends and 30, well, in this valley, I know they only got 30% to be fully vaccinated. So a large number of this population are unvaccinated. And certainly everybody that I know in my friends and community are unvaccinated. And nobody's
right.
been sick. I only know of two people out of a pool of maybe 100 people that I know, let's say, I only know two that got COVID and they stayed home and they said, well, it's either COVID or we've come down with a flu bug and we don't feel very well. And they stayed in bed for 3 or 4 days.
All
that's all I've heard of. So it's
right.
not the unvaccinated now, it's the vaccinated who are getting sick. And
okay,
they're the
I want
ones
to go back
who need the protocol.
In the next few minutes, we only have about 10 minutes left. I want to go back to Jesus, if we will. But here's something about the World Health Organization.
So you're quite right
Jesus.
That monkeypox, in terms of its disease severity, does not seem to be on a par with another disease such as COVID-19. But that's not the only criteria that we would look at. Fundamentally, yes, this is something that has been is spreading very quickly around the world. So that's one thing that really needs to be looked at in countries that have not ever seen this virus spread before. So 75 countries approximately in 2 months have recently reported cases. Many of those are in the European region, so about 36 countries are in Europe. These are countries that have never seen monkeypox cases at a scale such as is being seen right now. And we are seeing the progression of an emerging virus, an orthopox virus, spread in a particular population. So at the moment, cases continue to be reported among men who have sex with men for the most part. But we should not expect that to remain as such. It may be that this particular population group, as it is for any new disease spreading, it starts in one community or it starts in one setting, and then it might spread. So this really might be the canary in the mine that's alerting to us of a new disease threat that could spread to other groups. And if it does spread to other groups, particularly to people who are vulnerable to severe monkeypox disease, which we know there are certain groups that are prone to more severe illness, then we might see increased public health impact.
Yeah, so while we were on that, I just wanted to clip that in so that you can understand that they're still talking about an epidemic yet to come.
Yeah.
But
they're
wait
just,
a comment,
you
and then
see,
I want to get back
the
to
ground
Jesus. Yeah, of course.
The quick comment I would make on that is that somebody is, as a public speaker in a position of authority, putting the word out, just like they did with AIDS. Hey, you better look out for the homosexuals, right? That's exactly what she said. That was the key piece of her message. We all know monkeypox is on the rise. We all know it's going to places. This is common knowledge. She came out as a speaker saying, oh, and it seems to be starting in the community where men have sex with men, right? The same as they did with AIDS. Blame one section of the community for it, right? And it's now, this is part of this eugenics program that Hitler set in motion, where we don't have alive who is not who Hitler thinks is a perfect Aryan. Anyway, I'll say no more about that. It's just, to me, that's just another thing, part of the
program of evil people. Okay, while we're there, just for a second, the churches are talking about, well, the gay population, the transgenders, and all of that. So here's the case.
Once I hear this and ignore it and still take it, I'm condemned.
Guilty of the body and blood
right
of the Lord.
Then you are guilty because you got one of the witnesses of Jesus preaching against you.
That's right.
The Bible said, bring forth your witnesses that they may be justified, or let them say that this is true.
That's right. Uh-huh. For he that eateth and drinketh unworthily,
what is it?
Eateth and drinketh damnation to himself.
Yes.
Not discerning the Lord's body.
Uh-huh.
For this cause,
They're weak.
And sickly among you.
They're sick.
And many sleep.
They're dead.
That's right.
Read on.
For if we would judge ourselves.
You would judge yourself.
We should not be judged.
You won't be judged.
But when we are judged.
When you are judged.
We are chastened of the Lord.
You are chastened of the Lord.
That we should not be condemned with the world.
All right, you can put them away.
Amen.
Amen. There are many other things. That have stepped into the so-called apostolic. Women preachers, divorce. Some is flying rainbow flags on their churches now.
That's right.
Endorsing same-sex marriages.
Yeah.
Transgender bishops.
That's right.
Transgender preachers.
My Lord.
I don't want to ever use apostolic. It's an insult to Scripture.
That's right.
All right, so you see, the whole world is coming down to people who maybe think differently. Do you want to comment on that before we go ahead? Go right ahead.
I would just say what the Bible said. Judge not that you be not judged. Right? As far as I am personally concerned, I think there are two genders that the Creator made. He made male and female in all the species, right through nature, including the human species and the extraterrestrials. However, there are sometimes situations in nature which produce hermaphrodites, right? Creatures of two sexes. Frogs are an example, right? Some frogs, variety of frogs, can reproduce themselves. They don't have any sex. They just are self-reproducing, right? And there are other things in nature which demonstrate this unusual ability. And I am sure that it is quite possible within the human species that maybe there are some variations of nature which may well incorporate both male and female. And those people are led to an emotional trauma which requires them to choose which they will live as? Will they live as their male side, or will they live as their female side? I feel sorry for those people. I think it must be extremely difficult for them. I do not, however, think it's a matter for the government, the Congress, the politicians, or the rabble-rousers, and certainly not the ministers in the church to condemn and scream at them and not allow them in their churches. That's to me. But then that shows what kind of church it is. That alone tells you that they are not Christian churches, because a Christian church is trying to lead you to the Creator, your soul back to the Creator. And we have already said loud and clear, the path there is unconditional love and humility. So please, please let the preachers have enough humility to know that they don't have any right to judge any of these people. And secondly, let them try a bit of unconditional love, which loves everybody and everything. We may not love their behavior. We may not love the things they say and do, but we should love them, their souls, their potential immortal self. I'm not a heavy drinker. I like an occasional glass of wine, but I'm not what I would call a drinker. If I didn't see any for the rest of my life, it wouldn't bother me, right? And I don't like drunkenness around me. I don't like to see drunken men falling about the place, and even worse, drunken women. However, I'm not going to judge them for being drunks. I'm going to judge their drinking and say, I don't like it. I won't have them around me, and I won't be around them. That's my choice. That's me allowing what I accept into my life, right? But I can judge their drinking, but I can't judge the person, only their behavior. So I have no right to do that. And more than any others, a minister standing up in a pulpit does not stand in place of God. He needs to remember that. It's like nurses who think they're doctors, right? We've all seen it. You get bossy nurses who think they're doctors and want to tell the patient everything they have to do or not do, right? When they haven't had the training for it. Well, ministers are not Christ. And Christ, so far as I know, was the only being ever on this planet. And I know there were other great teachers, Buddha, Kuan Yin, all the teachers in history have had. But Christ was the only one that I know of who was directly and genetically connected to the small g gods who did the genetic engineering and made us Homo sapien in the first place, and who has direct link to the Creator. Direct, so that God really speaks to Jesus, and God can tell Jesus what to say for Jesus to say to us. So when Jesus says, you know, my Father and I are one, and what I'm telling you, if you listen to me, you're speaking to my Father, and you're hearing my Father through me. That is true, but it's not true of any of these ministers who are standing up in the pulpits pretending to be God and pronouncing their congregations as great sinners, and telling them to give their congregation, to give them, the minister, all their money, all their material resources, and to threaten them that if you don't do as I'm telling you, because I'm speaking for God, all you go to hell and damnation unless you follow what I'm telling. That is wrong. That is so fundamentally wrong. I would rather see every church in the world burn down tomorrow than I would have good people who are asking for guidance and help by going to church, listening to those lying rampages from power-seeking, greedy, egotistical, and especially when he had to say, and women preachers. What's wrong with women preachers? Women followed with Jesus. Women were in his congregation. Women went with him, and indeed, women were his disciples. Look at Mary Magdalene and Mary, the two Marys of Bethany, Mary, Martha and Mary from Bethany. They were followed Jesus. They spoke for Jesus. His mother Mary spoke for him, right? They were his disciples. They followed him. And it was only the Roman church, and particularly St. Paul. St. Paul may have written some wonderful letters to the churches, but he was an absolute misogynist. He hated women. It was women in the old ancient times, and right up even indeed to today, I think in many cases, women count their long, beautiful hair as their crowning glory. It was always considered good head of hair was a crowning glory to a woman, right? And it was Paul who made them cover it up to go to church, to the church meetings. That was not the tradition or the normal way to behave. He made them cover their heads. And I'll say something else that Spirit directly told me this. They told me, trust all the words in the New Testament attributed to Jesus Christ because, and I told you this in the beginning, they took the most careful translation of those words. They said, except for the passage about divorce. And if you actually look in the New Testament and read, Christ's teachings are like the Sermon on the Mount, a little verse here, a little verse there. The teaching on divorce is an absolute rampage against women. And Spirit told me, those were never the words of Christ. And those were the words of St. Paul. He wrote that and added it in himself as part of the church's teachings and said that Christ said it. But he never said any such thing. And when you think about it, why would Christ have said such a thing when one of his great miracles, in a way, was when he saved the woman charged with adultery from stoning? And when he wrote in the sand the sins of the men standing there. You remember that story?
Yes, I do. Yes, that? Of course.
Yeah.
Of course,
Why would he have done that if he was so set against divorce? He wouldn't. Right?
Right.
And remember the story when the woman asked, Lord, I've had X, Y, and Z husbands. Which one will I be married to when I get to heaven? And he says, basically, lady, you don't understand the program. You won't be married to any of them when you get to heaven.
I mean,
Christ did not, and I believe, of course, when Spirit comes and tells me information, you know, and when I say spirit, I use that term generically. This is actually beings that are extraterrestrial at the current time on a ship, right, orbiting Earth. They've been there for a long time. But they are one of that group, Christ and his friends, right? And they have taught me everything I know. And that was one of their teachings. And it was a very strong one. Don't believe that about divorce because it's not true. Christ never said any such nonsense. That was
all
what
right.
He said. Christ. So,
well, wrapping up.
Mind.
What would you say the next minute, next 60 seconds? What are you saying about this
whole?
What
I would say is, remember, salvation is a do-it-yourself program, and you can do it. Christ was not joking when he said everything you can do and more. And if you only want to do the basics, just remind yourself every day you are eternally connected to the Creator, and there is nothing coming out from the Creator to you but unconditional love. So your goal is to learn to love unconditionally yourself and put that out to all your friends and neighbors. If we learn nothing else but that, we have learned enough to move us a very long way forward on the progress to immortality and eternal life and expressing the love of God. You know, I will share this with you. The one thing I do say every day, because I'm not big on meditations and formal ritual and things, but every day I say, Lord, grant me, because we can ask for anything, ask and you shall receive, grant me the love in my heart that is worthy for me to offer the Creator. In other words, Lord of life, fill me with life. Lord of love, fill me with love. Now, I'm a long way from getting there, but I think it's creeping up on me.
Okay.
I think I'm getting more, the older I get, the more loving I get. So I think it's creeping up on me. It's gradually working. And we have to take responsibility for ourselves, our lives, but do it gently. Be, as I said, the star you really are. Get down off the crosses you've built for yourself. Start with loving yourself first.
All right.
Because until you can love yourself, you can't love anybody else.
Great. Well, thank you for taking a time to go through the book, Saving Jesus. You recommend that, and also the Emerald Tablets, you recommend those. And of course, John 14:12, verily, verily, I say unto you, he that believeth on me, the works that I do shall he also do, and greater works than these shall he do.
Thank you
very much. Appreciate you. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay, next time. And I close with this book by the Dalai Lama. It's called Religious, what of the title of that book was? Remember that book, The Dalai Lama?
Oh, yes.
Religious.
I can't remember the title, though.
I don't know. Anyway, but
it's really a secular ethics. I think it's a book of secular ethics.
I'll close with this. Okay. Hey, thanks. I really appreciate you. Have a good one now.
What are we to do? Where are we to turn for help? Science, for all the benefits it has brought to our external world, has not yet provided scientific grounding for the development of the foundations of personal integrity, the basic inner human values that we appreciate in others and would do well to promote in ourselves. Perhaps then we should seek inner values from religion, as people have done for millennia. Certainly, religion has helped millions of people in the past, helps millions today, and will continue to help millions in the future. But for all its benefits in offering moral guidance and meaning in life, in today's secular world, religion alone is no longer adequate as a basis for ethics. One reason for this is that many people in the world no longer follow any particular religion. Another reason is that as the peoples of the world become ever more closely interconnected in an age of globalization and in multicultural societies, ethics based on any one religion would only appeal to some of us. It would not be meaningful for all. In the past, when peoples lived in relative isolation from one another, as we Tibetans lived quite happily for many centuries behind our wall of mountains, the fact that groups pursued their own religiously based approaches to ethics posed no difficulties. Today, however, any religion-based answer to the problem of our neglect of inner values can never be universal, and so will be inadequate. What we need today is an approach to ethics which makes no recourse to religion and can be equally acceptable to those with faith and those without, a secular ethics.
That's from the book, Beyond Religion, by His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. Thank you for listening. See you next time.